Okay, translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is all-powerful, and he awards the results of one's fruitive activities. Thus, although one living entity's duration of life is very small, whereas that of another is very great, he is always in his transcendental position, and there is no question of lessening or increasing his duration of life. Okay, so you're all muted, so we'll read the purport. Both the mosquito and Lord Brahma are living entities in the material world. Both are minute sparks and are part of the Supreme Lord. The very short duration of the life of the mosquito and the very long lifetime of Lord Brahma are both awarded by the Supreme Personality of Godhead according to the results of their karma. But in the Brahma Sanghita, we find it said, Karmani Nirdadhati, the Lord diminishes or vanquishes the reactions of devotees. The same fact is explained in Bhagavad Gita, Yagyartat Karmano Nyatra. One should perform karma only for the purpose of satisfying the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, one is bound by the action and reaction of karma. Under the laws of karma, a living entity wanders within the universe under the rule of eternal time. And sometimes he becomes a mosquito, and sometimes Lord Brahma. To a sane man, this business is not very fruitful. Bhagavad Gita 9.25 gives a warning to the living entities. Janti deva vrata devan. Those who are addicted to the worship of the demigods go. Go to the planets of the demigods. And those who are addicted to worship of the pittas, forefathers, go to the pittas. Those who are inclined to material activities remain in the material sphere. But persons who engage in devotional service reach the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, where there is neither birth nor death, nor different varieties of life under the influence of the law of karma. The best interest of the living entity is to engage himself in devotional service and go back home, back to Godhead. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur advised, "My friend, you are being washed away in material nature's waves of time. Please try to understand that you are the eternal servant of the Lord. Then everything will stop, and you will be eternally happy." Okay. Ayusho pachayam jantos tataivo pachayam vibhu. Ubha bhyam rahita svasto duhstasya vidadachaso. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is all-powerful, and he awards the results of one's fruitive activities. Thus, although one living entity's duration of life is very small, whereas that of another is very great, he is always in his transcendental position, and there is no question of lessening or increasing his duration of life. Okay, Om Gyana Timuran Dhasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Karamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishta Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Paschachari Shatarine. Alright, so in this chapter, Swayambhuva Manu is speaking to Dhruva Maharaj. And Dhruva was, of course, very angry, and he was excessively killing the yakshas because of one was responsible for the death of his brother, so he's punishing them. So Swayambhuva Manu has decided to intervene and talk to Dhruva Maharaj, telling him to turn back to God, to forget this anger now, and he's given so many reasons, and now he's really focusing from text 17, now we're on 21, and it's going to go for a few more verses, focusing on helping him focus on God and his transcendental nature. Through different examples we have now given in the verses and the purports, we can review what it is we are hearing from Swayambhuva Manu. Is it Swayambhuva Manu? Or is it? Anyway, so that Lord is, we understand, is uncontaminated by the three modes of material nature, the interactions. The Lord is the nimitta matram, the remote cause of all causes. The whole creation is happening by expansion of his energy. Everything is occurring. So Lord is the original force. He glances over the material energy, impregnates the material nature with the living entities. He begins the whole process. Brahma is the secondary creator. And everything is dependent on his energy. But he is not the, you could say in one sense, yeah, the universe is his form, the universal form. But in another sense, no, he's outside of this. He isn't the, he's actually transcendental to the whole universe. Just like the potter who produces the pot, but he is not in the pot. It's just a pot he can put on the shelf, he can put in the kiln. So this is all showing about how the Lord is creating with the expansion of his energy, not as the Mayavadis say that he transforms into the creation. So this is really countering all the this belief of the Mayavadis. He does not transform into the creation. He doesn't become the creation. Although he has entered into every atom as a supersoul, but still, he's transcendental. So we're getting many examples of how he's transcendental, how he remains aloof from the reactions and actions and reactions of the three modes of material nature, the gunas. So we have other verses. He acts, but he is not the actor. He kills, but he is not the killer. And everything is going on by his inconceivable power. So don't even try to really comprehend it. It's inconceivable, in other words. But so we understand this. We're hearing about the Lord. We can hear all his qualities, how he's transcendental. And this, not so that we can intellectually understand, but we can receive it. All these apparent contradictions, but this will help us to enable us to become more to engage in devotional service, get some faith to surrender to him. So he is not to blame for the sufferings of the living entities. We hear it's their karma. That's he's created the laws of karma, the laws of nature, laws of time. But yet he's not to blame. He's partial to everyone. So if one is enjoying or one is suffering, it's their karma. He's ever existing, although time, in the form of time, in the end everything is annihilated, but he exists. In fact, he alone exists after the annihilation of the whole universe. He has no beginning, but he begins the universe. Even though the creation is exhausted after due course of time, he is never exhausted. He creates, there's birth and death in the universe, but he is free from birth and death. So these are some examples. And now in this verse, that was just a summary, this verse we hear, okay, some living entity, because of their karma, has a very small lifetime, others very great. The example was a mosquito with a very short life of maybe 2 weeks, or you can get killed earlier. Then Brahma, billions of years. So Lord is always transcendental, so there's not any question of his life being increased or decreased because of the material nature, what's going on in this material universe. So this is helping us to see the difference between this creation and the transcendental Supreme Lord. So there's the law of karma, and he is the one who awards the results of that karma, those fruitive activities. Karma means the what one does. But even those results, good or bad, he is aloof from that. So we have the choice to do good or bad. So thinking of these points then and purport, we can examine some of the things Prabhupada's saying to explain this. So we understand that people want to somehow defeat karma. They have a certain duration of life, and now in this age it's what could be very short. And sometimes we're a little, if personally affected, we might be disturbed even to find little children who die from cancer or some other illness. Now we know that we're supposed to have a long life, or maybe a grandparent has lived to almost 100, but this little child has died from some illness. So this is disturbing to us, actually. I can remember when my little brother died only at the age of 13. I was very disturbed. I was questioning, what's the whole point of life? Why he died? What's it all about? So it can cause people to also start questioning, what's the truth? What's the absolute truth? Which is a good thing. It was an impetus to find out some answers for me. Anyway, the duration of life is something many people, they don't care for their life, right? They want to end it quickly by killing themselves because they're suffering so much. Or others, they're enjoying so much and they want it to go on and on. So modern day scientists are trying to discover ways to prolong life. It's kind of curious. Some of the things they're doing, they're trying to find some medicines that can be taken, and a living being, human being, can find that death will be an optional then, because they'll be rejuvenated and keep going and going. And even there's methods in Ayurveda where one can do kayakalpa treatment and extend life like another 100 years, keep doing it 100 years, 100 years. And some yogis have actually done this. And so Pandem, we hear previous times in history, there was like the duration of life of Dhruva Maharaj, 10,000 years. And we have some examples, some great lengths of life from the Bible. Some of the patriarchs had long, 100, maybe 1,000 years or 500 years, 600 years life. So this focus right now on trying to extend life kind of defeat one's karma, really, by some means, because it's just focused on the body concept of life and that you're the body. But Bhagavatam is trying to help us come to our real identity as eternal spiritual beings, parts of God, part and parcel of God. So that's the important thing, to understand that all these attempts are, you know, it's almost amusing to see what they're doing. They have developed a method to freeze the body, thinking that maybe sometime later they'll be able to bring back this body to life, and they don't know that they've moved on. The spirit soul, once it's left the body, has moved on to maybe another body. So who's coming into this body if they can revive it? Some are cutting off their heads instead of freezing the whole body. They just cut the head off and freeze that, and they shrink the brain through this process. And they want to later on attach the head to a body. So this is extreme body consciousness. So it's like a monster, kind of Frankenstein science, to bring a dead body to life again. The scientists are even transplanting like a body of a dog onto another body. So all this crazy science just because of the body concept of life. We hear that we have some kind of duration of life. It's worded by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You can read somewhat from your astrology chart the length of life. There's different books will have chapters about if you're going to have a middle life, long life, or very short life, if a person's going to die just within the first few months of being born. So it's not really known exactly. It's really hard to predict everything very accurately. But we understand there is a certain duration of life we've been given, and that's because of karma, previous activities. So we understand then from Bhagavatam there are previous lives, even though we cannot remember them generally. There's some occasions where some people do remember their at least one previous life, but when we're speaking about thousands, Bhagavatam says thousands, and before even the universe was created, and the living entities were in an indolent state, and then they were injected into the universe. They had karma. They had their desires that they wanted to fulfill. So this universe was provided, and so they were given a body. So some will have a body that's very diseased, or short life, or poor, and no facilities to practically enjoy life at all. And somebody will have the opposite. According to that karma, there's a stored karma. So we get a certain portion of our karma in one lifetime. We can't handle the whole bulk of it. It's mountains of karma. We can't handle all in one lifetime. So a very small portion is allotted to our life, and we have some lessons we learn through the course of that life. And one of the main things is if we learn how to stop this karma by surrendering to the Supreme Lord and engaging in devotional service, because this is a karma. So even this normal karma activity, which people are very attached to, they're feeling like, well, if I work according to my nature and I will enjoy life, then I'll be receiving some livelihood, and I'll be able to also go to heaven by being a good person. I'll give in charity. I'll create something, be creative. I'll have a fulfill my desires for enjoying life and through my work. So they're very attached to karma, and then Bhagavad Gita teaches you can engage your nature in the service of the Lord. So this will help if we can begin the process of devotional service like this, and perform karma only for the purpose of satisfying the Supreme Lord. So then we become free from the actions and reactions. Also, we become transcendental. Speaking of those who are addicted to worship of demigods, well, for us in America, we weren't so very familiar with demigod worship. But in India, it's really common people to... Now, some sadhus have brought demigod worship to America, so many people are becoming also very addicted to this, and they're feeling that they're going to maybe enhance their material life and maybe get a good result when they die of enjoyment. So a similar idea, religiosity is performed, for instance, Christians, to gather in some kind of a church or worship ceremony and reinforce their desire to be good people. And if you be good, they don't know really some lot of the principles that were from the Vedic tradition of yoga. But anyway, from their own tradition, there's some things that it's all accepted to be how to be a good person. And so then for the hope of elevation to heaven. So this is like a stepping stone in a way to bring people to higher, rather than descending into crime and cheating and so on. So even people that don't go to any church, they're maybe even atheist, or they just ignore talks of God, but they feel like the karma mamamsakas, they think, well, we'll just be good people. We'll just raise our family and give in charity and just be generally honest people. We'll refrain from cheating others, and we'll try to enhance the life of the whole country or world by our actions and be good people, and then we're bound to get a good result. So it's like that. So there's so many people that are simply in this materialistic platform, worshiping demigods to go to heaven, go to church to go to heaven, and also to enjoy material life, and or even the atheists. They've got a kind of a religion, some of them. Simply bound, however, to this material world, and they don't know that, you know, temporary stay in heaven and then back to again this plane, which is the plane of karma, doing some works for again elevating. So up and down, up and down, and for the duration of this universe, and then go to sleep for a while and then do it again, and then go to sleep and do it again. So this is what they think life is about. Or some think that when they go to heaven, that's it. It's happiness forever, but they don't understand the complete story. So there's a lack of knowledge, really. But the main thing is that they begin somehow the process of devotional service and become free from this process of traveling around the universe up and down. So many desires to fulfill. So Prabhupada's explaining, you might be very addicted to material activities. So somebody wants to be a doctor again and again and again, or a musician, or some kind of something they love to do, and they just keep wanting to do it. Even they get to the end of the duration of life, and they're missing so much when they were younger, able to do this particular activity. So at the end of life, they're just hoping they can come back and do it again. But we understand that if there is birth and death, that's suffering, because it's always suffering for things to end. Even if there's some temporary pleasure in there, it's going to be misery. But this karma, we learn, is actually beginningless. Prabhupada says from time immemorial, or beginningless, we can understand it's there before we even entered the universe that we had this karma. So the Lord is not to blame for any of it. He gives us the place to carry out all our desires, gives us the place, but He is aloof, He's transcendental. But yet He is very favorable to the devotees, and here Prabhupada is explaining that He will even diminish some bad reactions of some devotees. That's kind of wonderful to know that He will do that. So we have the law of karma, but then He can actually vanquish the reactions of devotees, diminish them. So, say you were going to die in a car accident, maybe don't die. Well, some do, but some will just keep surviving so they can practice devotional service. Just some token suffering is given. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying you are washed away in material nature's waves of time. So you can think of an ocean of suffering, or another image would be like, there's this river during a flood time when there's rains coming down, and simply stepping in this river, you have no chance to cross. Say it's even a small creek that's only, you know, maybe 50 yards or 30 yards across, very small, but it's going so rapidly. Even big trees are being carried down this water. The water is, don't know how fast it's going, but stepping in it, you could barely even cross to the other side. So instead, you can be carried away down the river, never stopping until maybe you're injured by, you know, the river bangs you against something, or you drown. So you can think of just being in this river. This is material nature. This is the karma. It just being carried by this flooded river or creek or some body of water. Or sometimes people go in the ocean and there's this very strong current and they're just simply carried way out to sea. They can't even fight against it. So we can understand this material nature is like that. It's simply it's more powerful than us, really. So the only recourse is to surrender to the Supreme Lord and try to do some things to please Him, all our activities to please Him. Then to engage in devotional service, this is considered to be like a river, a powerful river that can't be stopped, like the Ganges flowing to the sea. So you get into this other river, which is carrying you to God. So this ocean, this river of love, just will carry you all the way to God, rather than just to annihilation and repeated birth and death. And then Prabhupada concludes that everything will stop, all that again, samsara, again and again, birth and death, and you will be eternally happy. So return to, go to the spiritual world, to Vaikuntha planet, to Krishna's planet, and never return again to the material world, never fall again to this place. So there's the song in the, by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Prabhupada sings it, which is his, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote a song for the Shakshastaka verses. So that verse, here it is. Ainandatanuja kinkaram patitam mam vishave bhavam budho kripaya tava padapankaja stita duli sadrisham vichintaya. So, O my Lord, O son of Maharaj Nanda, I am your eternal servant. But because of my own fruitive activities, I have fallen in this horrible ocean of nescience. Now please be causelessly merciful to me. Consider me a particle of dust at your lotus feet. So this ocean of nescience, like Prabhupada speaking of this ocean of the, this karma, this material nature. And then this song that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote, like a commentary on this shloka. And we can, you can listen to it. Anadi karma pale padi bhavarnavajale. I am drowning in the ocean of material world as a result of my karma, which is anadi, beginningless. So this is the meaning of this shloka of Lord Chaitanya. So we can meditate on these words and try always to take shelter of the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. Let's see, anything else we want to talk about? So he's explaining in the spiritual world, there's no birth and death, right? Different varieties of life under the influence of the laws of karma. So like we have here little bees we have that have a short life. Then, but we cannot apply anything or experience of this material world to the transcendental world. We can't apply our knowledge of ourselves and people to the Supreme Lord, because as I said, we're being brought out in these verses, Supreme Lord is aloof, transcendental, and although there are some things that we can understand about God and the spiritual world from this world, but not 100%, we can't just translate the experience we have here to there. So we understand we're persons, God is a person, we have eyes, nose, mouth, you know, senses, but God has all these, but his senses are completely different. You know, there's like hearing and seeing are all interchangeable, these senses. And a body that never grows old and dies. And here we have things that are enjoyable, wonderful scented flowers and music and different kinds of vegetables and fruits and honey and sugar. So there's also in the spiritual world, but you know, that it's different. We can understand this world being a reflection only. So we can get some hint of what the spiritual world is like, but never make the mistake of applying everything of our experience to try to understand the eternal spiritual world. But rather let that be revealed by when we're ready, God will reveal what it is. What is that transcendental world? What is his transcendental form, his qualities? And so we simply want to humbly engage in the devotional service, trying to please him always. Okay, so let's have some questions and discussion and anything you want to bring up. What's that sound?
Well, I was going to bring up a comment about karma. Then we'll lead to some questions, but how many people are so bewildered that they think they have full freedom in the material world Whereas the understanding we get from the Bhagavad Gita is that there's absolutely no freedom whatsoever in the material world.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a question of karma and punishment.
Mm-hmm.
If any devotees would like to comment on that, there's absolutely no freedom in the material world. The only freedom would be to choose to serve Krishna or not to serve him.
Yeah, like we hear that our certain level of happiness has all been spelled out, it's been arranged before we even enter the life, a certain kind of body we're going to get, and the family, and the level, you know, what kind of bed you're going to sleep in, and what kind of house, and what kind of level of education. It's pretty much all spelled out, and we can fight against it, sometimes try to fight against the fate, you know, but still, no matter, now it's different from the, you know, there's a big concept in America, especially, where you make your own destiny, you know, you just, if you desire something enough, and then you work so hard, and then you can achieve it, you can also become millionaire or president or some big thing. You can go to become an astronaut, go to the moon or whatever. You just it's all your work. Your endeavor is the main thing. Your enthusiasm and endeavor will help you achieve something to a certain extent. You can you apply yourself to go to school and you have a certain level of education, and if you apply yourself you can actually develop your intellectual ability certain extent. I don't think, no matter how much I study, I become as good as some of these scientists out there that know advanced physics and everything. So I don't have that particular kind of karma, maybe. Even math was difficult for me as a child. So, you know, we have that kind of philosophy that's prevalent, that we, it's up to us. And then we hear that actually there's more, there's a control put on us, the karma, and that our Lord is awarding the results so we get according to our karma things. So we're not trying to become fatalistic and say, well, never mind, don't even try to improve your life. You know, like say you're in the middle of a flood path, don't even try to move to a better house, and because it's your karma, right? It's just my fate. I'm going to every year have my land flooded and washed away. My house will be washed away. So we can use our intelligence and to some extent do some work that according to our abilities to create a healthy life. You know, we're not going to just eat sugar only. We can create a healthy life by eating proper vegetables, like 5 different fruits and vegetables. It's recommended, things like that, offered to Krishna, of course. But so we have some kind of freedom like that to choose to do things in a certain way to be having a healthy life. We're not going to just sit around and wait for the money to fall. Say maybe we have to actually go out and find it somehow, ask it from others, or do some job. So, so we have this kind of illusion of being freedom to achieve whatever, and then people blame others. Oh, well, you're just lazy, so you haven't done anything. So, of course, you know, you're not like, maybe you don't have any good fortune in your karma to, no matter how much you try, you will never really achieve this dream. But I think it's a big emphasis on achieve your dream. Everyone's talking about, I got this dream and I want to achieve it, so I have freedom to be as happy as I want. So there's so much emphasis on just this material world, but the scriptures are always teaching us, turn to God, start looking at Him, and just change your life to be trying to please Him and end this. Don't be so focused on this material world only. Certain extent, we have to kind of watch where we're going, right, when we walk, when we drive. But we're trying to be focused on God. And No. I don't know. Anybody has some ideas on this?
Yeah, well, it seems that that we do have some relative freedom in the material world. Maybe a good analogy would be like a prisoner. A prisoner is put in a maximum security prison. There's no way he's getting out. They're going to tell you what time to get up. They're going to tell you what time to go to bed. They're going to tell you so many rules and regulations within there that you have to follow, and they're going to be forced to follow them. But at the same time, there is some relative freedom within that prison. If you are a model prisoner, you may you may get an education. You know, you can either choose to stay in your cell and do nothing, or you can choose, perhaps I'll let you take some courses. Cool. And some people, when they leave the prison, they actually become reformed in the prison. Mm-hmm. And some, not only are they serving out their term, they'll be such a bad prisoner, they'll add years to their term. Mm-hmm. You may go in for a small stay, maybe 5 years, but you end up committing more crimes within the prison, and then you make it even worse, and then you may end up with a life sentence. You may end up committing murder, et cetera, within the prison. So there is relative freedom within the material world, but it's definitely relative. Mm-hmm. But there is freedom, because this way we end up creating some people good karma, some people bad karma. We do have that choice, even materially, not to speak of getting on the path to go back to Godhead, but there is freedom within the material world to improve your situation or worsen your situation, like in prison. And of course, then what Govinda added was that, you know, the ultimate freedom that we have is to choose to, we actually want to get out of the prison or not just to improve our situation. And that's if one comes in contact with a pure devotee, and that's really exercising the ultimate freedom of our spirit soul, is to surrender to Krishna or remain separate from Krishna. That's the ultimate. But if we stay in the material world, then we're going to be forced in so many ways, forced to do this, forced to do that, forced, beaten around by our karma. But within that, there is some relative freedom, which Mother Damayanti, you were pointing out. Anyway, it's just another angle of vision. Yeah, you could say there's no freedom. In a sense, there isn't. You could say there's no freedom within the prison. That's correct. But at the same time, you know, there's some relative freedom. Just taking another angle of vision to look
nice.
At it. I'm not disputing what Govinda Das said, but just agreeing with him, just kind of taking a little balance to that statement.
Yeah, I like your comment very much. It helped me to realize that actually we have a choice in how much we want to increase our karma in the material world.
Mm-hmm.
That's about our only choice, how much we want to increase our karma, karmic reactions, or, as you said, turning back towards Krishna. But anything done in the material world, even if it's good karma, it's still binding.
So
you're coming to realize that the freedom is really how much we want to increase our karma. That's what freedom means.
Well, I could take another angle of vision on that. That we almost don't have a choice of increasing our karma. We're going to be forced to increase it, because we're going to act. There's a verse in the Gita where Krishna says, Jatu tishtanta karma karyate hyavasa karma sarva prakriti jargunai. Now, nahi kaschichamamapi jatu tishtanta karma karyate hyavasa karma sarva prakriti jargunai, which means that we can't refrain from doing something, even for a moment. Karyate means to be forced. Karyate hyavasa karma. We're forced to act. That we're forced. There's no freedom. You cannot remain still in the material world. You are forced to act by the modes of material nature. Karyate hyavasa karma sarva prakriti jargunai. That the modes of nature are going to force us to act. So we're going to keep generating karma. Whether we do have a choice, whether it's going to be good karma, bad karma, where we're going with it. But you can't remain free from acting, he can, Jatu Tishtanta Karmapit, even for a moment, Jatu means even, Jatu Tishtanti, it just means to remain. Jatu Tishtanta Akarmapit, without any action, Akarmapit, that you can't remain even for a moment. Chana means like for just like a second. So you can't even remain momentarily without generating karma. So we're going to increase it no matter what, good or bad, because the modes of nature force us to act. They just come along and like with a spear or a pitchfork and just jam us. You gotta act. So everybody's going to increase it. Going to increase or generate karma.
Right. And people think that they're going to stop their action, right? They think, oh, I know the solution, I just won't act. But you were pointing out, yeah, you have to act. I mean, even the mind is always going, and you're always having to eat, so you have to do something about that. And then that results in other things, and you have to nobody can just sit still. Pretty soon after sitting still for a while, unless you're a trained yogi, you have to start walking around, doing things. So whatever you do is going to be generating karma. You can't avoid action whatsoever. Even people think that will be the solution. I just won't do any more my occupational duty anymore. I'll give all that up, and then I'll become real spiritual. I'll just sit around and be spiritual. But Prabhupada is pointing out so much in the Gita that does not work. You just degrade instead. So.
Yeah, that's what Arjuna tried to do. He tried to go on strike. Prabhupada quotes 3.9, and he doesn't give the whole translation, but it goes something like this: work must be done as a sacrifice to Vishnu, otherwise work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, Arjuna, perform your duties without being attached to the results for the satisfaction of the Lord. So the idea is it's bondage. The karma just means bondage. So the only way out is to offer the results to the Lord, and then you become free from the reaction. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, along similar lines, things that have been said, that's our choice. We can either go fruit hunting and try our luck, as Prabhupada said in a recent purport, or we can and then you're forced into this Yanti Deva Rata Deva. You may be going up, you may be going down, and but you're still in the material world, and you're still bound to the wheel of birth and death. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it depends on how much we want, the conditioned souls, how much they want to increase their karma. For instance, the mode of goodness, it seems that would bring less karma. For instance, those who are eating meat, especially the cow, they get very severe karma for that, whereas those in the mode of goodness, being a vegetarian, for instance, it seems as though there's less karma. Hmm. Anyone want to comment on the idea of less karma?
Oh, well, yeah, there's some severe reactions, just like any action, something that's causing violence. Say, even the state will punish you for if you infringe on others through different kinds of crimes that they've described, you know, fraud even. It's not even very, killing or anything, but stealing. So kind of stealing or killing or any kind of hurtful thing. So there's actions that are worse, reactions. You know, put you in jail.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's what Prabhupada, I think at some point he goes, wet stool, dry stool. It's all,
it's all
the same. Meaning, you may like Narhari was saying, you may get the first class prison cell, something. Yeah. You may get some expanded facility. Or you may be able to fly in the sky. You may get cities. You know, you can sink mango and a mango appears in your hand, you know, if you're a deva or a siddha. But you're still facing the death sentence.
Yeah.
You're still bound to, you know, and then it's danger at every step. You know, it's kings are becoming lizards and and deer. And, you know, it's just, you make an even an honest mistake and you in this hell to pay. So
dangerous world.
Not a place to linger. This is a place, you know, we gotta solve the problem here. And the problem is, you know, and so you may make it nicer, so by being a vegetarian you're not, you know, killing killing thousands of living beings just to live, you know, just so you can taste something. But still, Prabhupada, he's making it clear that we're not here to make it nice, you know, to go to heaven. Actually, I thought I saw in the conversation with his servant or something, Prabhupada said a lot of his disciples, or anyway, at this juncture, said, you know, they want to go to heaven.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's attractive. You want to go to heaven where it's nice.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not the goal. The goal is to go back to the spiritual world and be done with the cycle of birth, death, old age, and disease, which is even, you know, although it's minimized, it's even in the heavenly planets.
Yeah. So why do you think that so many of the disciples maybe want to just go to heaven? Do they feel that it's just impossible to even achieve the spiritual world? They just don't think they can do it, so they're just aiming at something less?
What do you mean by many of the disciples? What disciples?
Well, Prabhupada had said many of his disciples just want to really go to heaven. Is that really so, or is it more like a lot of the
I read that some years ago, you know, that Prabhupada actually made that statement. I'm responsible for that statement. Somebody could look it up in the folio, maybe come up with it. But it was in a room conversation or something.
He might have surmised it, heard from Krishna or something. He could have found out something that was really what people wanted. Sometimes people go to devotional service because they want to improve their material situation only. That's really all they care about, money, power.
Maybe Prabhupada meant that maybe his disciples would like to go to heaven. I mean, I don't think there's a side of me that would love to go to heaven, because I'm not a pure devotee. I don't have you know, the higher taste that I really want to have.
In a way, you're kind of at a halfway house to heaven.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You're one of the nicest places on the planet.
Well, that's true. But still, I'd like to go to a better heaven where there's mangoes the size of elephants, and, you know, there's intoxication that's unbelievable, and sex that's, you know. There's a side of me that would like to go. That's a fact. But stay clear.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's a natural tendency to want to escape suffering.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to suffer. And so, you know, the devas, they seem to have it nice, you know, so then why not? But Prabhupada's very clear about going back to Godhead. You know, he's very, that's all his preaching and his books, that's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And anything less is foolishness.
Mm. Krishna says all, from the topmost planet to the lowest, are all places of misery. Abrahma bhuvana, basic verse. Abrahma bhuvana loka puna avartino juna. Mamu Pechita Kunti Apunar Jamana Vijite, all places of misery. This is Krishna himself speaking. This isn't like, you know, some sage or some philosopher. This is Krishna himself who was responsible for creating everything. He's certifying it. What greater certification are you going to get than from Krishna, who's responsible for the whole thing anyway? It's all his brilliant idea. And he's telling us.
Yeah. I remember reading that too, that Prabhupada, you know, saying that, and it's like, and I know devotees like that also, that you know, they're really attracted to Krishna consciousness, you know, they love it, but they want to enjoy life too, you know, just now that they have Krishna consciousness, they can be happy, but they also want to be happy in the mode of goodness and enjoy things, because you really can't enjoy material life, you know, when you're in the mode of passion or especially ignorance.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I've even heard some say, you know, I want to take things easy in this life. I, you know, I'm not in a rush to go back to Godhead, and I'm not ready to do that. And, you know, I want to have a nice life, but, you know, and so it's unfortunate, because you never know what's going to happen. You could get diverted, and there's no guarantee at all. So I read in Prabhupada's letters to his disciples, no, just be serious and get out while you can. And because your next life in Kali Yuga is getting so bad, it will not be very nice. So just get out. Don't delay things.
Yeah, they were saying, like, if you go to heaven, say you just were only eligible to go to heaven, and you thought, well, let me do that then and stay there, 10,000 years, and then come back, and Kali Yuga is really almost the worst thing you could ever go to, like hell. So, well, yeah, we can get caught up. I guess they say that we've been caught up for a long time so far. It's very difficult to, in a way, to become so completely pure, that free from all that material contamination, that in one lifetime sometimes you feel like it's almost impossible. You know, say something, somebody says something, and you just become angry, and are you blowing it for a while because of, you know, so you say something in anger to another person, and how are you going to become free from all these things, maybe committing offenses to people, to force of the interactions of the modes. So how to do it? I guess we'll just keep taking shelter of Bhagavatam class and chanting prasadam service.
Okay. Anybody else?
All glories to Isanga, all glories to Bhagavatam class, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you, Damayanti.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, everybody, for the comments. Yeah, nice class and nice discussion.
Jai.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.